Let's head over to McLaren Vale and welcome to the show, Ben Riggs.
Good morning.
It's been a little while, sorry, since we've had a chat. So there must have been plenty going on with you. So firstly, let us know how's the season looking for Vintage 24?
Well, first thing I have to say, I think it explains McLaren Vale very well. I live and have a vineyard in Clarendon, which is just in the right next to the Adelaide Hills boundary.
Yep.
And we're just about to pull up at the beach and take the dogs for a walk on one of the most pristine, beautiful beaches in the world. So I think that sort of says a lot about McLaren Vale.
Is that the beach you can drive down onto?
No. Maslin's is the closest beach to me, and it's got beautiful cliffs, and it's one of the most spectacular places on earth. Wow. So we get it all here. We're very spoiled.
Yeah. The sea breeze and things like that must have a general influence over the region.
Oh, massive impact. Like today is quite warm. Adelaide is supposed to be 35 or 36, and we're going to be 30 or 31. Because we're due south and we're right next to the ocean, and they have quite a significant impact on the climate here.
Winery dogs, are they, that you're taking down to the beach?
Yeah, we've got my big black German short-haired pointer and a little Jack Russell. So you've got yin and yang in the back of the car.
And I bet you it's the little Jack Russell that's always doing the yapping and thinks it's the big dog. I love when you see a tiny dog up against a big dog.
And Arnold is the big dog, and he is the most gentle big dog in the world, but she still doesn't trust him.
Yes, gentle giant.
That's hilarious.
I guess if he puts one foot wrong, it hurts.
yeah, with squash. Mate, that sounds like a great way to start the day. We've got 38, I think, in Melbourne today. So,
wow. And we're only going to be 30 in the Gold Coast.
We're used to it. Yeah. We're not used to it, are we?
No, we're not, are we?
It's been mild.
It has been. And
well, this is from, we had a very hot, and Victoria and South Australia have similar weather. Yeah. Up until the end of December 19, it was horrendously hot. We had a lot of bushfires and stuff. From the 1st of January 20 until now, we've had, I don't know, 3 days maybe over 37. It's been the coldest 4 summers, I think, what I remember. No really spiky hot weather. It's been quite amazing. It's been quite cold, not just hot, but it's been cold.
How's that impacting? I mean, you're going to be hitting vintage very shortly. What are your timings looking like? Oh, wow.
Everything looks amazing. Everything looks incredible.
Great.
We've had lots of rain. I was just saying to Simon before, I haven't even irrigated my vineyard, which is in 20-odd years, the first time I've gone. I probably won't have to irrigate the Shiraz at all, which is very unusual in this part of the world. And like 23 tiny crops in McLaren Vale, and I think, I look back at vintages like 91, 94, 2004, maybe 2010. I reckon 23 will be as good as any of those, if not better. 91 was probably better because we had a reasonable yield as well as amazing quality, but 23 is incredible. Mm. It's some of the most special Shiraz I've seen.
When will we start seeing some of that, Ben?
Well, I've released my preservative free under the Mr. Brightside label, and it's quite good fun because it's preservative free, but the intent of that wine is a nice, soft, easy drinking McLaren Vale Shiraz, no oak and stuff. But it just looks so delicious, being such a great year, and that captures the year better than anything. Where it's just one little block picked and fermented and filtered and put in the bottle, you can't really cover a vintage much more thoroughly than no artifact at all. I'm just releasing soon the 22 Gaffer. So I guess 12 months will be 23 sort of Gaffer, and then the other year later will be the reserve wines. So a little while away. But 22 was awesome as well. 23, I think, is just that next level.
Do you think there are particular varietals, Simon, that are going to be maybe better than others from the 23 vintage? Any standouts?
Well, look, everything was pretty strong. I mean, I make, whites from Adelaide Hills and Pinot from Adelaide Hills, and they were all... I mean, Pinot was very, very fine, elegant and pretty, but strong. So we have Blanc and Chardonnay, and I'm just about to release my 23 Chardonnay. That's spectacular. So Adelaide Hills are strong. parts of the Barossa were strong and parts, they funny enough, Barossa had a lot more fruit than we did in 23. And I think where anyone, you know, didn't have big crops, because it was so late and quite cool and quite wet, where they had moderate crops, the quality was excellent. Where the bigger crops were probably, you know, not as good, whereas we had tiny crops in McLaren Vale. Yeah, even the you know, what you would call a C-grade block or a D-grade block is pretty strong. But Tempranillo looks really good. Look, there was no spikes in weather. There's no, you know, 40-degree days. The most important thing with ripening grapes is UV light more than heat. You know, and we had great weather, beautiful canopies, lots of UV light for the leaves to do the work and not dehydrate grapes, which... That's the most important part of it, and yeah, it certainly did its thing. And I'm sounding like Murray Tyrrell. Murray used to say every year the next one's the best one ever, and we've had an amazing run of, 20 was strong, 21 was excellent, 22 was next level, and 23 was up again, and of course 24 is going to be better. Wow.
So
just what we want to hear.
I just had a question, which is. Relevant, as I had a discussion yesterday. So with your preservative free, I was chatting to this guy yesterday and he said, I used to really love drinking red wine and now I find I get the biggest headaches when I have it, even just, you know, one glass. And is it true that, you know, some wines there's, you know, there's more, you know, sulfur in it and is that the problem? Do you have a thought on that?
Well, I hear that sometimes, and I say to people, do you drink white wine? They say, yes. Well, white wine generally has more sulphur than red wine. It would be rare that you'd have more sulphur in a red than white. So if someone can drink white, then it's not sulphur.
Yeah.
And there are you know, things like histamines, and there are some other compounds, and obviously tannin in red more than white. I'm not exactly sure. Sadly, for some people, it does cause them grief. Luckily for most of us, it doesn't.
Yeah, true. And it's interesting how it's happened over time for him. And, you know, he's mid-50s, I suppose. And, so it's just become a problem for him and he's really disappointed in it. I just thought that was interesting given you're doing preservative-free. So,
I would be disappointed if it happened to me too.
Yeah. It's but it sounded like it wasn't something you could just power through either. It was
no.
I've actually had this conversation with a lot of people, and my father was one of them. So Dad's, you know, turning 75 this year, and so you know, he's been a lover of red wine for, you know, decades. And I think that's just what a lot of people, a lot of men especially, is that their palates really change as they age, and I've heard this said by a lot of people. So I mean, you're too young to have gone through this, but it actually they find that once they start hitting their 60s, that they can't handle those big Shiraz or Cabs anymore. And it's literally just like a physiological change. So I don't know, Ben, if you have any thoughts on that at all, or if you've even heard that before.
That just sounds like witchcraft to me, that people can't Shiraz and Cabernet. I can't even believe that someone would... they deserve...
Tell it to cop it on the chin.
To go to a bad place, if that's what happens to them. Look, do you know what's funny? When I first was at Rosalie, I was only 17 years old. I was studying winemaking, and someone from Bollinger did this amazing tasting. And I can't remember the vintage exactly, but it was a 1956 or 4 or something Bollinger they opened. And classic Frenchman pulls the cork out, and it hissed. And he pulls the cork, and he says, "She's alive." You know, and it's like, oh, it was so exciting. And I tasted the wine, and... Look, I'm not even going to go quite the detail he went to, but basically, you know, I was saying, oh, it's the most amazing wine I've ever had. And he said, well, it's more of a curio, you know. He compared it to, you know, whether I'd like to be with a 70-year-old woman who, you know, beautiful, who could teach me everything about the art of love, or a 25-year-old. I said, well, yeah, point taken. And he said, but see, I didn't say young, I said mature. Rather than old, and as a 17, 18-year-old, I understood what he meant. And as I get older, I have a lot of wine in my cellar, and we have in McLaren Vale Tuesday night tennis at Mark Maxwell's house, and there's Chester Osborne and Jeff Hardy, Scott Collett, Mark Maxwell, myself, and there's lots of old bottles get opened. And you know what? The more and more, I like mature wine, but I find old wine tiresome. you know, and unfortunately, most of it's under cork. Most of it hasn't aged that well. You know, mature I love, but when they start getting old and they lose all their primary fruit characters and it's all about age and to me, I like a bit more youth in wine. And I used to love drinking that stuff, but now I've changed a lot.
So you've mentioned the Mr. Brightside, and that looks like a really fun range of wines. And obviously, you've got the preservative-free Shiraz in there, but you've got like the Eurotrash, and you're doing a pick pull, which is I absolutely adore. Can you tell us about the range and why you started it, and tell us about it.
I don't know, one day, I mean, many, many years ago, I don't know, 15 or more years ago, I registered the name because, you know, Mr. Riggs and Mr. Brightside. And then I felt like I have a fun range of wine and a fun label. And so, the preservative-free, I've been making it for some other people for 15 years. It's more about the style than the fact it's preservative-free. It's just they don't need to add sulfur making this young, bright, fresh McLaren Vale Shiraz. And then Trash is just a fun blend, fun name. And then Pickpool, like I used to consult South of France, and I used to, Laurent, who is the guy that I used to work with, I used to love some Sundays we'd head down to Set and eat, you know, shellfish and drink it with Pickpool. And I love a wine that has a simple raison d'etre, like, you know, drink it with oysters, you know, drink it with seafood. And Pickpool is just so perfect for that. Bright and crunchy and not too complicated. And I think, you know, sometimes wine doesn't need to be too complex and complicated. And I think that's what I like about the Pickpool. And the Pickpool, it's a funny old variety. It has propensity to crop as much as any grape I've ever seen in my life. Like, it's huge bunches and huge berries. But the flavour we get out of that wine is amazing. It surprises me all the time how flavoursome and delicious it is. I've got a rosé and the Eurotrash is evolving from 23 onwards. It's going to be Neradubbler. So I've got a little block where I get the pig pool from, which is down at Currency Creek, which is sort of right on the Finnis River that runs in the Murray River before it gets to Lake Alexandrina. And it's a beautiful little spot. So I get some narrow from there and the pig pool from there.
Nice.
But yeah, good fun. And look, it's another brand and it's another layer of work. And you've got Claire coming on later. She's helping me with the marketing of that brand too. So it'll be flying soon once Claire gets her hands on it.
I look forward to trying that. Just very quickly, I've got a pickpull in the fridge to have tonight with oysters, with scallops with XO sauce and some barramundi. And I'm like, I can see on your site that you're like, yep, pair it with shellfish, fish or cheese. And I'm like, that's what I'm doing. Nice.
Yep. Yes, that works well. And look, unfortunately, now I'm not going to mention who, but you know, some of the bigger wine sellers in Australia, they have a bit of pickpull, but it's all a bit old and tired. And with a variety that has a propensity to crop so much, some of those wines from France are not exciting. And they're a bit old. Once they're old, they lose that zing and that crunch. So I like them a bit fresher and brighter. And the acidity, I think, is really important with the oysters and the shellfish. Mm. They have an oyster shell. If you smell it, a good one has an oyster shell kind of character to it, which is quite interesting.
So would you say there's a saline aspect to it? Or?
Sort of. I mean, I don't know whether you talk yourself into that or it is, you know, they have this lovely crunchy acidity, this really refreshing nature about them that is a bit ocean-like.
It's not a varietal that we've seen for many, many years, is it? Like, as in it's emerging quite a lot now, but it hasn't been around all that long, I feel.
Five years, I wasn't finding it.
I tried a long time ago, and I used to go and do a bit of work in Languedoc near Béziers, and I was with Zara Brooks. I brought him with me, and he was helping them with marketing. And we were drinking pickpull, and said we're going to make this and get some grafted on a vineyard that we're involved in Langon Creek. And at the time, you weren't allowed to use the name. And so we sort of stopped. And then someone challenged it a few years ago. And we are now, at the moment, allowed to use the name. Because it's a variety. It's not a region. Yeah. The French, of course, will try and stop us. But so then people, you know, put it in the ground and started releasing wine. So it sort of got held up by,
I see, yeah, by
all
makes
that
sense.
All that EU kind of stuff.
Now, are you still making Ricky Ponting's wines for him?
Yeah, we're in business. And in fact, I was this week just finalising the Tasmanian Pinot and the two Pinots and the Chardonnay. And talk about great vintage. My God, the 140, which is the Tasmanian Chardonnay, is just delicious. It is one of the most, you know, we're looking at it before bottle and you know, natural acidity is really, I mean, I think it's nearly 8 grams per litre of acid, which is after cold stabilisation and stuff. And it's just amazing. And then the reserve Pinot, the 257, is it's flinty, it's funky, it's got great texture, it's a bloody good wine. So we're really happy with those wines this year. And we've just released 22 McLaren Vale Shiraz, the Pinnacle, and that's, the range is looking great at the moment. We're really happy.
I like it that you've always said he's so, you know, interested and wants to be involved. It's not like he's just lending his name to it.
No, we're going Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We're in Tasmania this week coming, looking, you know, going to visit some growers and wandering around, which is always fun.
Yeah, well, and so 24 down there, you reckon should look. Well, is it looking good, do you think?
It's been pretty wet around Hobart, but apparently everything's holding up at the moment, so I'll know more after this week.
Right.
So can I just ask, how did that actually come about in the first place? Like, how did he approach you and how did the relationship start?
Well, a friend of mine, David Krenich, who used to work for Mullet Hennessy, I had a beer with him in Sydney and said, I sort of got him to move on from what he'd been doing for 18 years. He was bored. And I said, you know, there's lots of people I know that could use his experience and expertise in sales and marketing. And so within a few weeks, he'd left, started the business, and then one day he messaged me and said, you know, what do you reckon about, because he knew Ricky through horse racing, what do you reckon about talking to Ricky about a brand? And I said, let's do it. And he messaged him, and Ricky went, oh, my God, it's my dream. And so he came down to McLaren Vale, and we hung out and, you know, talked about what this would look like, and Rihanna and Ricky were in, you know, pretty well straight away. And he talks about all the time, for him, success for this business will be, you know, if his children take from them. And, you know, he understands this is a long-term exercise and, you know, his name opens doors, but it also, you know, some people are resistant because it's a, you know, people keep thinking it's a celebrity brand. It's not. Mm. It's a brand, a serious brand that happens to be owned by a celebrity.
In
one way on that point, you probably need to over-deliver on the wine to counter the negativity that some people will have towards it.
Yeah, and look, the beauty is, and you know, at the beginning, for me, quality is everything, and certainly Ricky's never cut a corner in his entire life, so it's all about making the wines, you know, to the absolute best we can. And we've had things like the Close of Play Cabernet, which is Langhorne Creek Cabernet. I think one vintage, I've forgotten which one it was, 20, I think it won 7 gold medals, so it was up for a trophy 7 times. Unfortunately, we didn't get that next, you know, that would be 2 to 4 wines or 5 wines maximum. And you know, that's a pretty serious run. It was in 7 shows for 7 gold medals, so that doesn't happen very often. The Tasmanian wines were doing a superb. So no, there's a really, really strong focus on, and the 366, the icon wine, which is a McLaren Vale Shiraz Kunawara Cabernet blend. That's I think everyone's won a you know, high award somewhere, high accolade somewhere. So no, very serious about the quality. Very serious about the packaging. Rihanna and Ricky have put a lot of energy into, you know, what we deliver as far as what it looks like. No, it's been fun. It's and every single where everywhere you go, he gets recognised.
yeah, absolutely. Actually.
Even in a few years ago at Hobart Airport with a hat on and a mask because of COVID, people were still walking up and asking for his photo.
I suppose, yeah, you know, one of our greatest players, hey, and you know, ex captain and all that sort of stuff. So.
And known by everybody. It's amazing.
Handy golfer too, they say.
Yeah. No, he's takes that pretty seriously. I also make some of the Greg Norman wines that go to America. And I was on a Zoom meeting with Greg one day, and I said, "When you're in Australia, do you reckon we could enter an industry golf day?" And I'll get him and Ricky.
And I'll bring you as my guest.
And he actually said that, he said, yeah, he's played with him, and he said he's a seriously good golfer. So when Greg Dorn says you're a good golfer, I think that means something.
Yeah. Geez, Ben, aren't you in the know? I love that he's just like name dropping some of like the biggest Australian sporting names.
Yeah, it's funny how it came about, but you know, completely independent. But and look, America is, you know, is problematic for Australia, and it's something that a few of us in this part of the world are talking about. It's time we rolled up our sleeves and, you know, worked on how we fix that. And there's a whole lot of issues in this industry, and I think our current structure is not doing the job. And I think it's up to us in the industry to fix that, and then to roll our sleeves up and to get back on the road and you know, wear out the shoe leather, creating a market again. And that's what we need to do. Stop whinging and start working.
Yeah, and it is that. The three-tier system and all of that makes it problematic, plus the big distributors typically won't place an order until the wine is in country, and that's expensive to store and all that sort of stuff. But it's not insurmountable if you get enough people wanting to do it and banding together, as you're sort of intimating.
Well, the thing about Australia and Australian and when we built markets in the UK and the US previously, it's about personality. You know, the wines, the people.
Yeah.
It's you know, we make great wine, and it's up to us to go and you know, show people the passion. And I think, you know, and here's an interesting one for you, completely off topic, but in the pork industry in Australia, there is one body that manages pork. In the wine industry, there are 28. Wow. And I think that is there's a disparate group of people all working hard and all trying their best, but it seriously is not the right structure for this industry to fix itself up. You know, and there's a whole lot of complicated issues behind things like wet rebates and stuff that we do need to address, because it's just flawed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is a topic for another day.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Sounds like you could open Pandora's box of worms.
Could keep you busy for quite a while on that topic.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We've got to do something. It's sitting around complaining doesn't fix. It's time we brought up our sleeves and we'll get the industry back on track. We just need some. I spoke to our premier a few months ago and said, I need your support. And you know, South Australia is still the biggest part of the wine industry, and if we can get our house in order, I think that'll help. So we're working on it busily at the moment.
Oh, great. Sounds exciting.
Actually, I also just heard that South Australia had the best, economic results out of all states for the first time in a long, long time. So South Australia is going going strong.
Well, there's net immigration positive now. So we've you know, for 25 years, there's more people, and particularly young people, leaving South Australia than coming here, whereas it's turned around. Particularly people from New South Wales and Victoria apparently are moving here. Much cheaper real estate and, you know, much less population, easier, less traffic, all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's funny, you know, my cousin who's lived in St Kilda in Victoria her whole life always cans Adelaide and, you know, claims we don't have good coffee, claims, you know. But it's such a fabulous place. I mean, where I live in Clarendon, I'm 28 kilometres from South Terrace. You know, I'm amongst vineyards, the Adelaide Hills. It's so beautiful. Where else do you get to do that?
Yeah.
We're quite spoiled.
It is super accessible, especially now that, you know, the roads to the vineyard, to the wine regions are sort of in order. And we did an outside broadcast a couple of months ago from Barossa, from the in Tanunda at the Cellar, Barossa Cellar. And it was fantastic. And it's so easy to get to, you know, some of us drive, some flew. And, you know, and we always talk about McLaren Vale saying, you know, you fly over, you're virtually landing before you've left. And then you have, you know, half an hour, 25 minutes, half an hour, and you can be at a tasting bench in McLaren Vale.
Yeah, it's pretty special. And then if only you could see where I'm sitting parked right now, is I'm at the beach because the ocean is glassy. There's this beautiful little wave rolling in. There's people walking their dogs. It's so pretty.
Sounds like a pick pool sort of thing.
That's going to be the one of the day now.
First.
Yes, maybe. But
that's a good idea.
That's a bit more responsible. Ben, great to catch up again, and we make sure we won't leave it so long between. Good luck with Vintage, hey?
Thank you.
Sounds like it doesn't need much luck. It sounds like it's a shoo-in. Just kidding.
No, we don't want to jinx these things, do we?
No, we certainly don't.
I looked at the weather forecast for the next 2 weeks, and right up to the end of February, it should be nice, mild, mid 20s, should be good. So we're laughing.
Excellent. Well, brilliant. Good luck, and look forward to trying some of the 23s as they get released, and then see how 24 ends up.
Thank you.
Good one, mate. Thank you. Enjoy the beach. Bye.